This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are now live here on Instagram. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Pet Life Radio. Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. We're here for you, here for your pets. And, you know, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you ask questions because that's why we're here. It is a kind of an overcast, kind of cloudy-ish Sunday here in L.A., wherever you happen to be, whether it's going to be 9 o'clock like it is here in L.A., 10 o'clock, 11, or noon if you're back east. That's why we're here. So how to get a hold of me? Very easy. Either you can just actually, I just say, if you're already here listening to me on Pet Life, then all you have to do is ask away. If you are want to call, you're embarrassed, you're not in front of your, this is Pet Life Radio, you're not in front of a computer screen, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. If you are here on Instagram Live, you can just, first of all, I'm trying to wave to all of you. Go ahead and ask away. You like the color? Thank you. It's salmon. I like it too. So anyway, we thrive on your questions. So anything you want to ask, now's the time. I have a little bit of a herder out today, given the fact that I am leaving here and heading straight to the airport, heading to Las Vegas for the Western Veterinary Conference. Remember, about a month ago, I was in Orlando at the VMX, formerly the North American Veterinary Conference. These two are, without a doubt, the largest conferences in the United States. And VMX, sometimes they say one of the largest ones in the world, though the World Small Animal Veterinary Association does get a lot of people also. And these two have always been neck and neck. And I think that, you know, because in all fairness, because Orlando on the East Coast, we get a lot of South American and European veterinarians, where in here in the West, we pretty much get obviously 90% of U.S. veterinarians. But it is a great conference. And, you know, growing up here and going to veterinary school at UC Davis here in California, I've been going to Western probably since, I think I went once as a student, a senior, 1984, but a long time. Suffice it to say, a very long time. I think I've maybe missed, in literally in 40 years, I think I've maybe missed two or three. So anyway, great New York Yankee, great question. Good morning. Wanted to know your thoughts on vestibular disease. Is it common in the United States? Any new treatments out? So that's a wonderful question. Great way to start this Sunday. Vestibular disease, we call it IVD. Now, again, there's IVDD, which is the disc disease, okay, intervertebral disc disease. Now, this is a vestibular, idiopathic vestibular disease, IVD. And, you know, we joke, you hear the name idiopathic, it means that we're a bunch of idiots and we just cannot figure it out. And so it's not that what it means, but it just means it happens. There is no rhyme or reason. We don't know predisposing factors. And many dogs will have this at one or more times during their life. And what it looks like is all of a sudden, these dogs are literally, they completely lose their balance and equilibrium. So you see a dog falling over, usually have a head tilt, they're circling to the side that their head is tilted to, and they are like, they just can't get up. It almost looks like they're glued to the ground. They can get up, but they're so afraid they're gonna fall right over again, they don't wanna move. It could happen just like that. And one thing that I tell people when I get these calls, and I'm going to tell you a funny story, maybe hindsight funny story, may not have been so funny when it happened, but if you grab their face and you look at their eyes, look them straight in the eye, and you're going to see their eyes going back and forth, just their eyeballs flickering back and forth, fast, slow one side, and then fast to the other, slow, fast, slow, fast. And that usually is a clear indicator of this idiopathic vestibular disease. It's a balance and equilibrium, middle and inner ear, totally screwed up. And I said, we don't know why it happens. So anyway, talking about VMX, North American Veterinary Conference, I was there, I must have been, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And I get a call from a client who happens to be, based on his job, suffice to say, one of the more powerful men in Hollywood. And I just, you know, he tells me what happened. He goes, we lost the dog. His name was Norman. We lost Norman. What do you mean you lost him? He says, he's here, but he's not here. He is literally, he's glued. He's stuck to the ground. Every time he gets up, he's falling over and he's not coherent. He's not listening to me. And right away, that was like, as I said, he said, when he looks like he's glued to the ground, that was all I had to hear. I knew exactly at that point, well, with 99% accuracy, surety, that that's what the problem was. So I said, grab him by the face, look at his eyes. What are his eyes doing? And he says, they're flickering back and forth. I said, okay, that's what it is. So I told him, chill out. I explained to him what it was, that it's going to most likely go away on its own. You can give him for now, because, you know, he's home. He doesn't have drugs. You can give him some meclizine, which is bonine. If you go to the drugstore, it's right next to Dramamine. It's a travel sickness. It's an anti-vertigo medication, and it can be effective. It could help. It's going to cure it? No, it's not going to cure it, but at least it helps with the symptomology of what's going on right now. Makes him a little more comfortable. I said, you do not have to run to emergency. Here I am, 3,000 miles away, telling this guy, don't worry. Don't even have to go to an emergency clinic. And that was pretty gutsy. But of course, well, not of course, but I was right. And so that's what IVD is. The good news is it usually resolves on its own. Sometimes we like to put them on steroids because we don't know what it is. So if it's a sort of an inflammatory condition, then at least we can, you know, we can take care of that way. So anyway, the dog obviously did really well. Of course, I was the hero. He saved a lot of money. Not that money was a problem with this guy, but he didn't have to drag the dog to the vet. Now, personally, we had, and my sister who's on with us, in fact, I think both maybe, that we had a white German Shepherd named Sheba. And later on in life, she was getting these insults, these episodes of IVD, idiopathic vestibular disease. And she literally ended up, she having a permanent head tilt. So her equilibrium, her natural normal plane, instead of being like this, was like this. So she ended up, and she had a number of these, by the way, in her later years. But after, I think, the third or fourth one, that's how she ended up. So for the rest of her life, and she lived over 15, it was amazing. She had a little bit of a head tilt walking around. This was her norm and didn't bother her one bit. And that's the beauty. It doesn't bother them at all. So for those of you who are just joining me, we're talking about idiopathic vestibular disease. And from my sister who just joined, that we're talking about Sheba, who ended up having this permanent head tilt after a while. So anyway, and yes, and my one sister, Beth, and she was so cute. And 100% she was. All right, let me see some other. Let's see. Ah, my senior corgi is racing in nationals at Santa Anita today. That's interesting. I didn't know they have such a thing. My life with corgis, right? Tell us more. Tell us more. So it says my senior corgi is racing at the nationals at Santa Anita. Unless her senior corgi is an equine, I don't know. Santa Anita has dog racing, so it must be a fun. I'm hoping it's a fun thing. So let us know more about it. Hello, I see JB is there. Hello, JB. And notice now I have a new name for you. I'm going through. Okay, the latest with the virus rescue canines. Okay, this is a good question. There is more and more coming out. I think we talked about this a little bit so far. Well, first of all, the good news is the numbers are coming down. Everything is kind of planing out. And you know, with all the insanity over this initially, there is no lab, including the University of New Hampshire, which was doing a lot of work with Colorado State University. And as I mentioned earlier, I think last week when I got back from VMX, met my good friend who is like head of, his name is Mike Lappin. He is he's an internal medicine specialist, subspecializing infectious disease. Their lab has been working on this as well. No one's been able to identify a single new agent, either for whatever testing they would do in whatever this is or may have been. So the general consensus at this point is that it's really a complex canine respiratory infectious disease complex, CRIDC. That's why they call it that. So it's a combination of a number of bugs. The feel is that since we don't know exactly, is there a new disease? Is there not a new disease? Is it just a combination of what's already out there in a certain combination? So our recommendation is, and this seems to be generally accepted now, there are three of the major respiratory diseases that we can protect against. Okay. We have the Bordetella. Many of you, most of you hopefully are vaccinating for that. It's every 6 months to a year, depending on the exposure. It is a bacterium. All right. So it's a Bacterin because it's a bacterial infection and there's no really good vaccine for it. So if you frequent areas where there are a lot of dogs, whether it's a dog park, whether it's doggy daycare, a boarding facility, grooming facility, you might want to go every 6 months. In fact, many of them are requiring it every 6 months. Then you have parainfluenza. This is less talked about, but if you look at most of the distemper parvo vaccines, DHLPP, DA2, adenovirus type 2, TP, the one P is for parvo, and the other P is for parainfluenza. So you're getting both of those, which is important. Now, the newer, which, well, it's not so new anymore, but the new bivalent, because it has the H3N8, which is the older version that's been out for a while and really not that pathogenic. And then you have the H3N2, which seems to be the new one that's causing a lot of problems. So whereas I was only recommending that vaccine as a core, not a core vaccine, as a lifestyle vaccine, if you or your pet, obviously your pet, frequented these places, the dog parks, the doggy daycares, the grooming, et cetera, then yes, you would want to do the influenza too. It's a bivalent H3N8 and H3N2 influenza. But now, after hearing Mike and hearing, seeing what's going out, I'm recommending it more often now for almost anyone because it seems like it's part of the complex. The more we can protect against the diseases that we can protect against through vaccination, then the less likely they will get this new complex. And if they do get it, it's going to be much less aggressive. So again, let's go back to early COVID, talked about comorbidity. If you were sick and other things, if you had diseases like obesity, like diabetes, like some sort of immune-mediated disease, then, or immunosuppressive disease, or you were on immunosuppressive medication, then it was more important to make sure that you were protected. So that's how I feel about it now. So I hope that answers the question. Will it ever end? So it's going to end. I think that there's more that we know about what it's not than we know what it is, but I'm not that worried about it. Okay. In the meantime, ear infection. Okay, good one. So Martineau, regarding ear infection, would head tilt only be a sign? How can I tell for sure? So yes, it's a good question. If there's an ear infection and there's a head tilt involved, you're right. They would still be walking fine. They might be rubbing at their ear. They won't have the nystagmus, which is the eyelid, eyeballs rolling back and forth. So when it comes to ear infection, there are other ways you can tell. First of all, smell the ear. I mean, many ear infections are more so are yeast and bacteria. Obviously, some could be pure bacterial. Oftentimes, they're both. But there's a distinct yucky, musty odor, dog smell to yeast. And you will see a discharge. If they're tilting ahead, then there might be, if you look at the other ear and it's fine, well, that kind of tells you right now, you're dealing with a one-sided ear infection, which is not uncommon at all to have one, only one side. Or you can also take your finger on a little wad of cotton or gauze. You could take a cotton swab, just hold it, you know, maybe an inch from the tip and put it down the ear and wipe up. If you're getting a lot of this greasy black discharge, or even if it's like light tan yellow, which could be a bacterial infection, like more like a purulent discharge, then that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with an ear infection that definitely needs to be seen by a veterinarian. You need to have the ear cleaned, flushed out, do a cytology possibly to find out what bugs are involved. And that helps us decide what is the best medication to use. Now, sometimes if it looks like it's generalized, we might try an ear problem, you know, like clean the ears first, flush them out, take a look down the canal, make sure everything's okay, and then put an ear medicine in, something that we can put in, like an ear pack or like Osurnia, Claro, that is, we put it in and it's good for 7 to 10 days, or send home something. And if that doesn't work, or you come back in a week, one week recheck, and it's still bad, then it's time to do some work, you know, some more diagnostic. Many of them just obviously respond pretty well, but that is kind of what's going on. A lot about the farmer's dog food. What do you think about it? Feeding our dogs good, give up. All right, now we're getting into an area that I like talking about. Real quickly before we break, there are a lot of fancy dog brands out there. Farmers is one of them. Just Food for Dogs is another. There are many of them out there now. They're fresh frozen. So here's my thought. If your dog likes it, I'm going to use the same thing. If your dog likes it, if you don't mind the very high price, the dog has a nice shiny coat, has normal stools, et cetera, then yeah, it's fine. It's not that it's bad. The question is, do we really need it? You know, I had so many clients, I said, so why do you switch it? Well, because it's marketing. The reason why they're so expensive, besides the fact they have good quality ingredients, you know, human grade and all that stuff. Is it better? Has anyone tested one against the other and then done blood tests to see how is it really affecting the dog? Nothing that I've seen. So in fact, I think I talked about this last week. Veterinary nutritionists coming out and saying, you know, look, it's not bad. Don't not feed it, but don't switch because of the marketing. If your dog is on something and doing well and likes it and you can get it easily and you're not spending an arm and a leg, don't feel badly. Don't think you have to feed these fancy foods. And when it comes to raw, we've talked about that. I am not an opponent of raw, but I don't like raw that has not been gone through some process that is going to kill off the bad bacteria. Listeria, Campylobacter, E. coli, Salmonella. We need to get those, you know, make sure they're out of the picture, whether it's going to be freeze-dried, flash freezing, whether it's going to be high pressure pasteurization, something. when you just cut off a piece of meat, that's like taking, you know, a hunk of salmon that you buy at the regular market and start eating it raw. You can do it. You might have a great gut flora that's going to protect you. But then again, you can get sick. And that's why when they talk about sushi grade, it's a different type of the way it's handled, the way it's processed is really trying to avoid. And even with all that, there are people that go out and have sushi and get sick. Just don't switch to another food like that unless your dog either is showing signs of an allergic reaction, an allergy to what they're being fed, or they're not eating it, or they're eating it, but they have white, dry, flaky skin, or they're eating it, but their stools are always mushy and soft, then yes, you need to look for maybe something else. But don't switch just because you saw an ad. Don't switch because this says sounds from a marketing perspective like it's the best food on the planet and it's human grade. Because we're not so sure that they're not humans and they're still dogs and their gut flora has changed. So when I hear, well, God, I mean, in nature, their wolves used to just tear apart now. Yeah, they did. But it goes through all these years of domestication, generations of domestication. The gut flora of our modern domesticated dog is not the same as the preceding generations of wolves and wild animals, wild dogs. So keep that in mind. Something to think about as we go into break. We'll be back after these short minutes. I'm going to come back and have some more questions to answer. Don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back. We're back live here on Pet Life Radio. On the break, we talked about another one of our viewers here on Instagram. Tried a lot of different things. She got kibble. Her dog did very well in Farmer's Dog. And as I said, my son was feeding his Frenchie, one of his Frenchies, because one has bad allergies. He's on a special diet. But the other one, I loved it, but it was just getting so ridiculously expensive. They saw what it was. You order it, you can see what the ingredients, and they started making their own. And he loves that too, and he's doing great. All right, this is an important one. My vet says my dog's creatinine levels are high, urine test pending. She's only 7. She has mild periodontal disease. She eats poop. Well, okay, dogs do like to do that. Could the bacteria have affected her kidneys? Well, now, first of all, 7 years old is a little young to start having really any kind of disease, but obviously it happens. So creatinine, BUN, phosphorus, those are the three enzymes that kind of dictate, give us an idea of kidney health. And then also as kidneys start to fail, since it's sort of a stimulant to stimulate the, it's like a hormone that comes from the kidneys to stimulate the bone marrow to produce red cells is called erythropoietin. And that is coming from the kidneys as well. So as kidneys start to fail, unless erythropoietin is delivered by the kidneys, then these dogs become anemic as well. So there are a number of things we look at. Now, what is the most sensitive indicator that is least affected by other factors? That's why it's so important, is creatinine. We also look at the urine specific gravity. So we went to see urine test is pending. I'm very curious to know whether specific gravity. That is, the job of the kidney is to evaluate how much fluid the body needs to keep, the excess it can urinate out. So therefore, when we have excessive fluid, when you're out with the guys and drinking too many beers, the urine is totally clear because you're just, it's all that excess. We don't need it. So you're just going to urinate it out. Conversely, if you just came back from a marathon and you need every ounce of water that the body, so then your urine is going to be extremely concentrated. That is the kidney's job. That and a bunch of hormones, okay? So there's antidiuretic hormone, ADH, and there's a whole feedback mechanism going on in the body. Aldosterone, that's too technical for this. So just The job of the kidney, with obviously some help of the brain and other factors, is reading the body's need, keeping what the body needs, and urinating out the rest. And it's like a filter. So therefore, when kidneys start to fail, they stop being able to do that. And so now, regardless of what the body needs, they're going to urinate out. They're not going to concentrate the urine. So what happens when you need more? Then they drink more, because the thirst center is saying, oh my God, the kidneys aren't working so great. We need to kind of refill the fluid loss. So that's why we call it PUPD, polyuria. They're urinating a lot, and therefore polydipsia. They're drinking a lot. And there are other diseases. Diabetes, you'll see PUPD. There is Cushing's disease, you'll see PUPD. So these are about, also in kidney disease, you're going to see PUPD, polyuria, polydipsia. So what's interesting is creatinine is the most sensitive indicator. Usually it's rare to have an elevated creatinine without an elevated BUN. So BUN is the most affected by diet, by hydration status. We call that pre-renal. So that is something that we really need to keep an eye on. So when the problem is not actually the kidney, but it's going on because some other factor before the blood hits the kidneys, right? Then we call that pre-renal azotemia. Before the kidneys, azotemia, not as serious, but we got to find out why. So if I have a dog that is only 7, is generally healthy, has a little elevated. Now, I need to know, when you say a little, levels are high, I want to know how high is creatinine. But BUN is normal, phosphorus is normal, and I'm waiting for the urine test. If the urine test shows that the concentration of urine is well within normal, say 1020, 1030, 1040, goes up to 1055, you don't want it to be between 108 and 1012. 108 and 1012 is called isostenuria. That is where, that is the level where it's the, basically the solute of tap water. That means the kidneys aren't doing anything. They're just, everything goes in, is coming right back out. So that is concerning. 10.8 to 10.12. Below 10.8, that means just like it takes work for the kidneys to make the urine dilute, I mean, concentrated to save water. When there's too much water, then there's another disease that where it actually can, like psychogenic polydipsia, where they're just drinking to drink or have an ADH defect. Then they're going to have very, very low specific gravity, less than 10.8. So that means that the kidneys have to be able to work to do that. So just like they have to work to concentrate the urine, they have to work hard if they're going to dilute the urine more than regular tap water. So if I just had a creatinine, I'd wait for the urine test, and then I'd want to see, check other things to see what's going on. If it's just creatinine, but the dog is showing no signs, not PUPD, normal phosphorus, normal BUN, I'd probably not panic. I'd retest this dog. I would give it just, you know, keep an eye on her. She, keep an eye on her. And wait about 2 weeks and retest. You don't have to do a whole panel again. You can do just called the renal panel, which will include the, you know, just the a CBC, complete blood count. You'll check anemia, the main kidney enzymes, and a urinalysis. It's less expensive than a full panel, and keep an eye on it. If that is still off, then I would probably recommend a good ultrasound, maybe a consult with an internal medicine specialist to look at the kidneys and see if there's anything they could see just on the kidney architecture that might be going on. But, you know, at this point, creatinine alone, if everything else looks normal, what you could do is you can actually put her on a kidney diet, a renal diet, whether it's NF by Purina, whether it's renal diet by Royal Canin, whether it's Hill's KD, and feed that for like 3 to 4 weeks, and then recheck and see if that creatinine is coming down. If creatinine is getting worse and worse, then there may be more of an internal problem with the actual kidney. But I would think that if it got to that point, we're going to see a high BUN and probably a high phosphorus as well. So again, that's a great question. And do me a favor, if you can, after you get these tests or your analysis comes back, feel free to reach out to me. So normally I like to sit and schmooze, but I have a plane, literally a plane to catch. So I'm heading to the airport. We will report to you from, I'll be doing some segments from the Western Veterinary Conference. It's a great conference. And hopefully new products, new things, new ideas I want to share with you. And otherwise, we'll be back here next Sunday. If you have any questions during the week, reach out to me. If you're here on IG, you know how to get me. Send me a direct message, a personal message, and I will get back to you if it's important. Otherwise, if it's really good and not urgent, I would love to do it next week. I'll have you ask it on the show. For those of you on Pet Life Radio, again, you know how to reach me. Anything you send me, drjeff@petliferadio.com will come through to me, and we will be happy to answer as well. So have a great week, everybody. I will again report to you during the show, the conference. It's a great conference, and we'll see you next week.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.